That's right. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with you this morning, and it is my great pleasure to have General Adjutant General Robert E. Livingston on the air with us here today. I tell you what, General Livingston, that's a big title.
Yes, ma'am. We like to keep it complicated up here.
Well, it's
great to be with you today.
Hey, it's great to have you on the air. I tell you what, we certainly have a lot to talk about here this morning. I noticed yesterday the F-16 fighter jets at Shaw have been ordered to stand down, and I guess this has to do with more of those sequester cuts.
It does, what's happening is that we just don't have enough money to continue operations in the Air Force as a whole, and so they are taking units that have, at this point, lower priority missions and mainly training missions and really cutting them back quite a bit. And in fact, just like the wing out at Shaw, they have cut them back to no flying hours. Now, that at McIntyre with the Air National Guard, we still have a Homeland Security mission, a Air Alert mission guarding the East Coast. So we will continue flying that mission, and we will continue training for that mission. And then what will happen is as units get ready to deploy, they'll start getting into a train-up mode where their pilots are able to get back up in the air.
Futuristically, though, this is not a good thing not to have your people being trained at all times.
No, it's a very disturbing piece, and this is the insidious nature of sequestration, is that the cuts are not, we're not able to make decisions on where to make cuts except in a very narrow bandwidth. We can't say you're giving us a half a trillion dollars worth of cuts over 10 years, so what we will do is we'll take half of it out of research and we'll reduce the force to get the other half. We can't do that. We have to cut everything about 11%, 12% across the board. And when that hits our operation and maintenance accounts, all of a sudden we cannot fly the whole air fleet that we have. And we're seeing similar reductions in the Army, but it's not quite as dramatic because it's cutting back on hours for armored vehicles or cutting back on mileage for our wheel vehicles. So it's not quite as dramatic as what the Air Force is doing, but this is what it'll take through September on the sequestration unless we come up with a better way of doing it. And there is some movement in Washington. We're starting to hear the, of course, both houses of Congress have passed budgets. The president is submitting a budget. So we got three budgets out there now that can take the place of sequestration. And the rule is if you have the same amount of cuts required by sequestration or more, then we can take sequestration off the table, which is what we're hoping that we'll end up doing in the next few months.
Well, the only thing I hear, General Livingston, is the fact that I think I heard yesterday that the idea of a grand bargain may be difficult now, particularly since we do have the three budgets in, and they don't seem to be coming together with any threads.
Well, I'm afraid I will have to defer to the political bodies that be up in Washington. We are providing our input. We think that there are some ways in the Department of Defense that we can continue to save money. We think we can get to the additional. We've already taken about almost a half a trillion, about $480 billion. Over 10 years out of our budget, and sequestration does a none of 490, and we think we can get there without doing what we're doing with sequestration, but it's going to be up to other departments, other entities to deal with it too. And you know, let's go back to what you and I have talked about several times, is this debt is a strategic threat to our nation. And we have to do what it takes to get that debt under control. So I don't envy our politicians with what they have to wrestle with, but I know from a military standpoint, this debt can be overwhelming if we don't get it under control. We have maneuver room right now, but if we don't get it under control, don't slow the growth down and actually reverse it, it's going to be worse than us not flying fighters for 3 or 4 months.
I understand, and we do have to make those cuts, but I just do worry, and I also worry about the impact on South Carolina. What are we seeing there, General Livingston?
Well, right now we're seeing across the board cuts, so that's affecting the whole nation. We are, and just to tell you the some of the concerns that we have in the South Carolina National Guard, and this is something that really bothers me, is that our uniform, about half of our uniform troops that work full time, actually are federal technicians versus full time members of the military, whether it be airmen or soldiers. And one of the solutions with sequestration was to cut the civilian workforce time using furloughs by 20%. And so it affected these uniform troops. And it was just kind of, well, you happen to fall in a certain category, so we're going to cut that. We're going to cut your hours by 20%. Doesn't, without regard for readiness. And that was a big issue. Now it looks like that we've been able to stay that decision for a little while, but that is still something that's out there looming. Certainly, we're seeing a lot of cutbacks in our defense. We're seeing defense purchases, really operations and maintenance right now, fuel and things like that. So, of course, that affects our economy. Some of our defense suppliers are going to be affected in the future months as we continue to cut back. So it is affecting our economy in South Carolina. It is going to affect our readiness in South Carolina. Although I will tell you from the South Carolina National Guard standpoint, we are doing everything that we can to mitigate that damage to our readiness, because we won't have an opportunity to train up for some of the duties that we do, like a hurricane comes or an earthquake or a major chemical spill or something radiological. We've got to be ready to go, and we'll be ready to go. And that's part of the advantage of this great volunteer force that we have, and this part-time, and it's really not part-time, but people who have those two lives, that civilian life and that National Guard life. So it is going to affect us, but we're going to do whatever we can to mitigate it. And while we do all that, we continue to send troops to Afghanistan and to Kosovo and all over the place. So our people are staying busy even with these budget issues.
Absolutely. In fact, we sent 130 South Carolina National Guardsmen from right up here.
Absolutely. We just sent Bravo Company 198. Their home station is in Hodges, but they come from all over the state. They just left out. Before them, we sent some security personnel from our fighter wing, our 122nd engineers out of Edgefield, and our agricultural team headed over, and we sent our Chinooks, our CH-47s, out of McIntyre. So we're staying pretty busy, and we're going to send a few more over there. We'll be up to probably about 2,000 by late summer, and then we're going to see that drop off a little bit. But a busy time in South Carolina, not just our troops deploying, but we have several major exercises. The governor's got a hurricane exercise coming up the end of this month, and then we participate in a national exercise in late May. What we call Ardent Sentry, in fact, is people down in Barnwell and some of those counties will see some increased activity, because what we're going to do is actually train with a hurricane and then a release of a radiological agent. It'll be simulated, although we will actually play with live agents. That'll be a great exercise.
Play with live agents. I think you need to clarify that one. I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. That's probably a bad choice of words. We will exercise with actually live agents. We have people who are prepared in our civil support team and in our chemical company to deal with radiological contamination. And that's a good thing because South Carolina, you know, per capita is one of the has one of the densest electricity generation by nuclear power in the nation. So although the likelihood of a release of a radiological agent is very, very low, the if it does happen, it's a pretty bad thing. So we are we're very well prepared to deal with that along with our interagency partners. And what our people will be able to do in conjunction with the Savannah River plant is actually handle some of the live agents like they would have to if we did have a catastrophe. So really a very high-level exercise, an exercise that will, you know, take us to the brink of really what we would have to do in the event of a catastrophe like that.
Well, you know, it is good that our National Guard is out there having those practice missions because you never know when something comes down that they're absolutely needed.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing that we want the people of South Carolina to really understand is although we have been fighting this away war, we call it the away game. It's not a game because, you know, people get hurt and people die. But we have been involved in the wars overseas for 12 years, but we have not let up on our readiness here in South Carolina. And in fact, I would say we are probably more ready to take on the state mission today than we were 12 years ago. So we continue to improve. We continue to take the lessons learned from our combat mission and continue to exercise our state plans. So we're getting better and better all the time. In fact, we had a former chief of the National Guard Bureau down here about a month ago, along with a team looking at what we do here in South Carolina concerning what we call situational awareness, but it is actually tying together all of our military and civilian sensors so that we can understand the problem, whether it be a hurricane, whether it be an earthquake, whether it be a man-made disaster, and we can respond to it better in support of our local authorities, because what we're here to do is to support our local authorities and to restore order, to help them restore order, not to come in and take over, but to come in and really be that key asset that they can use and direct.
Well, you know, I think y'all do a terrific job. I fear if we have too many cutbacks to the military that we will be unprepared, but it sounds like the National Guard is trying to do the best with what they have to work with.
Well, that is true, and we've talked about this some before, and not maybe as much detail as we are now, but the cuts, the military itself is a large bureaucracy, and once you have a bureaucracy that you have fed a lot of money, there are inefficiencies that develop. Our military is absolutely the best at winning wars that we have ever had. It is not necessarily the most efficient organization in the world, and sometimes that efficiency and effectiveness come together because you want to be very responsive. So a lean and mean organization sometimes can be a little bit more responsive. So we've got some work to do within the Department of Defense we'll be able to deal with some of these cuts. In fact, we probably need some of them. But it really does not solve this debt problem. This debt problem is much, much larger than Department of Defense. In fact, is you could eliminate Department of Defense and not solve the deficit problem. And that is very disconcerting to me as a private citizen and also as a defense person, that this great threat to our nation, our defense aside, is still not being solved. So, yes, I'm very concerned about cutting too deeply into the Department of Defense, but I'm even more concerned that hopefully we will have the willpower to take on the big issue. That's just something that our national leaders have to balance.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it is a big threat. You know, we talk about threats to the economy. We talk about threats to the military, and we do have a huge threat right here with the budget issues.
We do, and you know, that threat overseas doesn't go away. So we can't just say, you know, let's get half the balance by really cutting back on the military. We've got to be prepared. We've got to continue to stay engaged. And I will use anecdotal evidence, back in the late 80s, early 90s, we won a major victory through the Mujahideen in Afghanistan drive the Soviets out of Afghanistan. And that helped fuel the actual fall of the Soviet Union and the lifting of the Iron Curtain and really made some huge changes occur in Europe and took away a big threat to us. But we failed to continue to engage Afghanistan for that 10-year period, and it came back and bit us in 2001.
Yeah.
And every time we fail to engage, we lose a little bit of influence in the world. So spending a little bit of money up front, spending time having our militaries trained together, helping to help our neighbors, not tell our neighbors what to do, but to help them, it is critical that we stay engaged in the world because we're not isolated, never have been, but especially today we're not isolated. And if we allow things to develop on their own, there are people who do not like our way of life. There are people who do not like us, and they will develop some of these troubled regions to work against us. So it's going to be very critical that we reach that balance of a good engagement plan, but in an economical manner. And, you know, quite frankly, I think the National Guard will play a very big role in that plan. Because of our cost effectiveness, because of our civilian skills, and especially because of our tie to the American community. It's going to be a challenge, but challenges are exciting too.
You are absolutely right. You know, now let's talk a little bit about a couple of other issues out there. This month, I understand, is Military Child Month.
It is. In fact, as I had that on my notes to mention, one of our big issue, or one of our big thrust, is care for our troops and our families, and it is so critical that we keep our families involved, that we keep our children involved, because that's why we go to war. That's why we fight. When we go to war, we fight for each other. But the reason we go to war is to make sure that our families and our children especially are protected and that they have a chance at a great life like we've had. And so it's very critical that we care for our military families and our military children, because if we ignore them, what we're fighting for, we're wasting away. So what a great month. We've got several activities planned, both on our Army and Air side, where basically it's bring your child to drill weekend, and they'll come in and have some activities, but they'll also get to see what their mom and daddies do in the military life. So, you know, it won't be for the whole weekend. It won't be a huge distractor, but it will be an opportunity for the children to really understand what the sacrifices that their parents make and why they, as children, the sacrifices that they make, why it's so worthwhile and why they should be so proud of the sacrifices they're making.
Sounds to me like you're recruiting early.
Absolutely. We start them as soon as they're born. My grandson that was born in December has already got a military hat, and I'm trying to get him fitted for camouflage.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, but one of the other serious topics that I want to address, it seems to me like that we are having so much more problems with our returning service people with PTSD and some of these other issues. What is being addressed? I know you've had programs out there. How are those succeeding, or are they?
We are having great success, and if you have one case and you have one person that hurts themselves or hurts somebody else, it's too many. So
sure.
We will never be finished with working innovation on this issue, but we continue to really stress our five pillars that, you know, a spiritual basis, a strong family, the buddy system, a good, meaningful job, and then the circle of professionals that are out there to really assist people in crisis. And we are still dealing with some of the issues of our combat rotations. And the interesting thing about that is we are able to get a pretty good handle on those when our troops come back, and we work through those issues. One of the things that kind of confuses what we see with PTSD and other issues is that some of our societal issues creep into our National Guard. We've been able to cut our suicides in South Carolina. That's kind of the tip of the iceberg, but our high-risk behavior patterns are along with this. We've been able to cut it from twice the state average, and the state average runs anywhere from 30 to 60 per 100,000 people. You know, we have 600 to 800 suicides in South Carolina a year, which is just, to me, an incredible number. We've been able to cut it from twice that average to less than half the average in the state, and we're very proud of that. That's a great thing, but what we are finding is that our last two suicides over the last 3 years were societal issues. These two soldiers had never deployed, and they were family issues, and sometimes issues that go back to when they were teenagers. And you start finding out about these things when you really investigate them deeply. And that's really one of our big challenges, is to take this wonderful system that we've built for our combat veterans and wrap our arms around somebody that is having a problem at home that may drive them to losing touch with reality and then doing something bad. So it's a challenge that I don't think will, well, I know it will never go away, but it still can be tied around those five pillars. And it's really helping people stay grounded in reality, and that you know, there's something bigger than them, and some people that depend on them, and people that love them and are wrapping their arms around them. We've got great professionals. They will work with people day in and day out. It's just identifying those that are having problems, and they come from all walks of life, and it surprises us sometimes of you know, really who's having a problem. So it's our biggest challenge is identifying the problem, because it just doesn't come from combat. It comes from so many other walks of life.
Well, don't you also think that society in general, just right now with the stabbings and the murders and the kidnappings and everything, it seems like society's gone wild.
It is. It's a very interesting time. I wish somebody could wrap that one up in a little bow and tell me what's happening in society. It's just we kind of lost some of our self-control, I guess. It's very disturbing. Our professionals, and I can't say enough good things about Colonel Taylor and his team that are reaching out to all of our, and it's just not our soldiers and our airmen, but it's our families and our children, because they're under a lot of pressure too, and these deployments cause pressure. We just continue to work that piece. And you talked about Bravo Company, who just deployed, and I've got a chance to visit with them on Saturday, and they just are so aware of each other. And it's not a great love fest. I train you hard. I prepare you for combat. I prepare you to do really tough things.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I am hard on you and I have great demands, I also let you know that I care about you and that you are part of a larger picture, part of a larger group. And that has resonated with our people. That's one of the things that has, or that is the thing that has really enabled us to get our suicides and high risk behavior, certainly not down to zero, but a tremendous reduction, and something that's below what we're seeing in society in general. So that's a pretty good thing, and I'm so proud of them doing that.
Absolutely. One more question. When we do have returning, or we do have people that are in the National Guard and everything, we all know that the unemployment rate is high, and I know one of your projects was to get them back to work. How are we doing on that?
We're making progress. We had a unit come back in December that had several hundred people unemployed. And our base is we have about 12,000 airmen and soldiers, so that's what we base our unemployment rate off of. And we popped up in the high 5% range, which is still below the state average. And we've been able to work that down into the low 4% range. Anybody that's wanting a job that's with the National Guard, or we are connected with the National Guard, we're eventually able to get them something. And the fact is, we are really starting to tell our new recruits, not only will we give you a very meaningful part-time job, which carries a lot of benefits with it, but we'll actually work to get you a great full-time job too. So that resonates. We're having some great success with that, and continue to have it. And again, that's that team I was just talking about, that what wonderful work they do. And that takes a lot of pressure off of people. And by the way, in a public forum, as I always try to do, is thanks so much to the people of South Carolina for supporting our veterans, not just our National Guard veterans, but all of our veterans, with jobs and helping them to find great meaning in their lives, not just from military service, but from that civilian service, where they're able to get out and contribute in a different way.
Well, I think everybody should know hiring a veteran or somebody in the National Guard or in the Army or Navy, et cetera, you've got a great trained person coming to work for you.
You do, and South Carolina, it's interesting, as we educate employers in South Carolina and we connect them with returning veterans, they suck them up. They want them out there. They want them as employees, and they really support our efforts. And that's not true in every state in the union. And so people of South Carolina have a lot to be proud of. And I think you see it in our improvement in our economy and the way that we were able to draw industry into South Carolina. And that's just a good attitude by the people of South Carolina. We want to work. We want to contribute to society. And our veterans are that way, too. And our employers recognize that. So it's a good symbiotic relationship between our employers and our veterans.
You are absolutely correct. I certainly appreciate you, General Livingston, taking the time out of your busy schedule to come on the radio and talk with us. Is there anything else you'd like to put out there before I let you go?
Well, our troops continue to do wonderful things. I would ask that we pray for our great nation, and we pray for those who protect us, whether they be overseas or here in the continental United States. In our South Carolina troops, they're in Afghanistan, Africa, Kosovo, Kuwait, South America, and I think there's a couple of out in on the southwest border and up in Washington, D.C., and over in Asia somewhere. So, South Carolina continues to stay deployed externally to take care of us, and we're also prepared internally, and we just support it. We just appreciate everybody's support and everybody's prayers, and it's just great to be with you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking time this morning. We have had Adjutant General Robert E. Livingston for South Carolina on the air with us this morning. God bless, and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.